morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our weekly Sunrise Project call, where it's always a safe space for all of us, filled with love, compassion, and our desire to heal ourselves and our families. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am smiling because I'm so excited to have a very special guest with us this morning for this week's call. Our guest is Dr. Norm J. Jones. He is an organization development scholar, practitioner with a focus on equity-minded executive leadership and team development. With over 25 years of experience in higher education and organizational management, he has held senior leadership roles at large-scale organizations and some of the nation's premier colleges and universities. In fact, his past positions include Special Assistant to the Superintendent of Harrisburg City Schools, Associate Vice President and Dean of Institutional Diversity at Dickinson College, Associate Chief Diversity Officer at Harvard University, and Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer at Amherst College. Incredible organizations and schools, higher education organizations. Dr. Jones also consults across for-profit and nonprofit sectors, collaborating with organizations such as Ahold USA, Carlisle Regional Medical Center, Interlaken Center for the Arts, JetBlue Airlines, the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, the U.S. Department of Transportation, the American School of Bombay, and many, many, many more. As a published author, Dr. Jones has contributed several articles and book chapters, and is a sought-after speaker and lecturer. He frequently speaks on topics such as diversity as ecology, inclusive onboarding, building trust among managers, and tomorrow's DEI. Can't wait to talk about that, given where we are in the world today. A graduate of Harvard's Institute for Educational Management and the Tavistock Institute on Human Relations, he was also an Arthur Vining Davis Fellow at the Aspen Ideas Festival. He holds a BA in English from Morehouse College and both a Master of Public Administration and a PhD in Workforce Education and Development from Pennsylvania State University. Dr. Jones invests significant time in civic engagement, serving on the boards of St. John's Congregational Church, Hooley Dickinson Hospital, the Salithin Institute, and the Corporation of Haverford College. He also holds offices in the Delta Chi chapter of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated and Beta Sigma Boule. In his personal time, Dr. Jones enjoys life with his wife, Paula, their blended family of three, and their two very spoiled French bulldogs, Bella and Jaden. Thank you so much, Dr. Jones. Your bio is incredible. And I have heard from Dr. Vicki Johnson just how, on top of all of your accolades professionally, just what a wonderful human being you are. And I appreciate you being here this morning. So good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. This is very special.
We're super excited to have you. And our topic this morning is fatherhood, the first face of leadership. And this is such a critically important topic, especially now, with the state of the world that we're in and what has been happening just in the first 6 weeks of 2025. And so as we sit here in the middle of Black History Month and all that's going on in our country, we know how imperative it is to have fathers, especially in our Black families. So I want to start with the first question I have for you. Is with your learned and lived experiences in this diversity space and the DEI space, which is under such huge attack, and with all the sweeping changes that are happening in the country right now, yeah. What have you learned about this space and about leadership in this DEI space in our country?
That's a great question and a great first question. Thank you. I would have to say more than anything else that I am learning that leadership comes from the inside. That might sound very cliche, but when I unpack it, I mean that quite literally, because there are too many distractions in the external environment to even look at our landscape as a logical space to make decisions. The whether it's the dizzying executive orders or the walkbacks by both for-profit and not-for-profit organizations, or the flipping of language such that you can't quite figure out what people stand for and believe in. You've got to have a
Right.
space that you tap into that you find credible, consistent, sustainable, believable. You got to tap into that space to make decisions as an individual and as the leader of teams. And I would say that that applies to me in my life in the context of both my professional and personal life right now. I'm digging deep, and it's not on the outside. That's for sure.
Right. But so how do we do that? Because when you think about the words you just talked about, credible, believable, some might say that our current leader of our country is not necessarily believable or credible and has changed so many things in our landscape with like a sweeping gesture. How do we dig deep? And what do you say to organizations and to your family, even around all these changes that are happening? How do you really dig into those beliefs and really stand firm in those spaces?
Yeah, I think the digging deep, as I think about it more, is less about products and more about process. I mean, it isn't as if, I can come into a space and drop some kind of wisdom, and suddenly that organization is safeguarded from all this going on. But there is learning in everything. And so even if we can challenge ourselves as leaders and as individuals who care about other individuals to slow down enough to really think about what's happening and observe what's happening, we will find kernels and nuggets of wisdom. It's hard, but sometimes I turn on Fox and I
What?
watch, I know. I watch the interviews because I see more and more the ways in which language is used to craft a narrative that's not even true, not even real. And so when I'm working with clients, for example, and we're going through these executive orders, the thing I say more than anything else is executive orders are not laws.
That's right. They're not
And
laws.
so
They're not legislation.
you've got to dig into the place that gives you enough patience to really work through what is being said, what's not being said, where are the real parameters, what does the law say? I mean, this is work many of us have not had to do necessarily because we've enjoyed, to some extent, a certain kind of equilibrium around a lot of these issues. That has been turned on its head now. And so I'm not at all suggesting that there are like antidotes or solutions, easy fixes out there, but I am saying that there is learning in the process if we can really get quiet enough to really observe what's going on. And a lot of what's going on is actually smoke and mirrors and switch and bait for people who lead with emotion or lead with criticism without a true interrogation, those kinds of things. So it's a moment where we're having to stretch ourselves, right, in order to even be resolute and measured in the way we show up and make decisions.
I love that. And so what you're saying, what I hear you saying is that, and people are putting it in the chat, it's that internal leadership. And it's also knowing what people are saying across the board, whether it may be people that we agree with or people that we may not agree with. It's knowing what is happening in the universe so that we can listen better and respond better, right?
I want to say one other thing that just popped in my mind. When we think about leadership of self, this is also a time, and it's actually kind of a luxury, even though we may not see it that way on its face, when we get to exercise more agency over what it takes to lead. I've been in a few meetings lately where I have forced myself to wait after a question's been asked to check in with myself because the question is so triggering that if I answer immediately, it's not going to be the answer that's most useful for the stakeholders that really need it. And the older version of me would have answered faster because that's what a consultant does, that's what an expert does, that's what a man does who's decisive, et cetera, et cetera. And those, you know, prototypes should have always been challenged, right? But because we are more performative than we want to admit many times, we just kind of fall into those expectations, those assumptions. And what I'm finding is, you know, people aren't dying because I took 3 extra seconds to answer a question or moved a meeting back because I can't bring it today. I can't bring 10 and y'all need 10. And because you don't deserve 8, let's meet tomorrow. You don't always have that luxury. What I'm saying is we need to experiment more in that space because that agency has always been ours, but we haven't been focused on it because we tend to fall into other people's expectations more than we do our own expectations of ourselves.
Oh, I love that, 'cause what you are saying is applicable in the workplace and in our homes. Because what I hear you saying is, like, sometimes we need to pause before we respond. And that's so applicable everywhere. And it's like, maybe walk around the office, walk around the kitchen, walk into another room for a minute and say, I'm going to be right back, to take that pause so that the response is more thoughtful and deliberate and not just flying off the handle. And so I want to transition into that, because most of us here, or many of us here, are parents or caretakers, caregivers. And so knowing that, I want to lean into what you just said. As a father of 3 children and doing this work, can you talk to us about how we can best support our children or grown-ups that are still our children, always our babies? How can we better support them, especially in the world that we live in right now? I think a part of it is what you just talked about, taking a pause. But can you share some of the other things you've learned?
For better or for worse, you are catching me at a time in a chapter, if you will, where I am really trying to walk myself right up to that line of comfort slash discomfort, as it relates to certain kind of vulnerabilities. And one of my vulnerable projects, let's call it, is to really make the right choices when it comes to what I observe in my kids. Because I have been, just kind of generally speaking, the kind of dad that's more like, this is who I am as a dad, and you will figure out how to make that work for you as my kid. And I'm now in a space where it's more like, this is who I want to be as a dad. And in order for us to make this work, I need to actually spend more time figuring out who you are as my kid. I know that you carry my DNA, so I recognize a lot of this and your mom's DNA, but that doesn't mean that I'm good, that it's one size fits all, obviously. And so if I think about my youngest, my only girl, baby girl, Aaliyah, who is 11, she, and this is just an example, she needs to have lots of different projects going on. She's a creative, right? So if you take something as simple as, well, not simple, but something that's kind of rudimentary as getting your homework done, Aaliyah's way less likely to be truly invested in her homework if she doesn't come home and on her own accord and on her own decisions kind of decide what creative thing she's going to do to get settled and grounded. And part of the reason that is the case is because, much like her dad, she's a pretty severe introvert. So she's given all those extrovert chips through classes, through recess, through trying to make sure she's impressing the teacher, through the crushes that she refuses to tell me about, through all those things. And so when she comes home and she goes in her room and the door closes, and I'm okay with that in smallish doses, I know that she's resetting. And so why kind of pound this whole, like, you know, you can get 10 minutes, you can grab a sandwich, and then you need to get on your homework. Why do that if that is not what works for her, right? My son, on the other hand, has the clock is ticking when he gets home for starting homework, because without that accountability, he's not going to start his homework, right? And sometimes it's not even because he's trying to be slick. Sometimes it's because he gets distracted by other things, right? Videos or his phone or whatever. So I just think it's actually about a pause. Again, right?
A
Taking the time to
pause.
observe what you're seeing in real time. And it's also situational. Like, it doesn't look like that every single day. But it is vulnerable for me to think about what I'm observing and make parenting decisions from that place. Because I was raised in a system that basically purported that parents are supposed to know what they're doing. If you're going to have a kid, you should know what you're doing. Now, we both know that's like
That's
hilarious,
not true
right?
at
In some
all.
ways.
Right.
But
Absolutely.
even the performance of knowing best is not always useful, right? We got to push ourselves to be the leader, but our kids are also instructing us in many different ways about how we should be leading. And we're going to miss it if we're not paying attention.
I love that. I love that on so many levels. And it's like learning to observe and let them be who they are is probably the hardest thing, I think, about parenting. Because of what you just talked about, it's like all the things we've been told or we've learned, you know, up until we become parents, it's like, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do this. And then you put them on this trajectory based on what we, who we are, or how we would operate. But the reality is what you're talking about is letting your daughter go to her room and close the door so she can reset is so critical. And the sooner we can get there, the better. Because your daughter is how old? How old
She's
is she?
11.
Yeah, so she's 11. So getting there so much earlier, how do we do that? I mean, I know how technically, but it's harder. It's easier said than done, I think, is the
Absolutely.
point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you had any besides that experience, like learning to pause, learning to take a moment, how do you respond? Have you had any difficult challenges with your children that you have had to work through that you could
Oh,
share with
none,
us?
Kelly.
None,
It's been
zero.
smooth sailing. Yeah, I can't think of a
That's a
thing.
blessing. But I would love for you to share.
Oh,
Love for you to
gosh.
share if you have an example, just anything that would
Yeah.
give us, you know,
Well,
give us some perspective.
I think one example that I'm, because again, I told you, you're catching me in this chapter where it's I'm kind of pushing myself to be more vulnerable. I think one of the most significant learning spaces for me right now is actually with our oldest son. And as I told you, we have a blended family of three. So Jason, my 26-year-old, is from a previous marriage. I was engaged to his mom and we did not get married. So that in and of itself is its own story, obviously. But Jason has two kids of his own now. So I'm also a pop-pop.
Oh, wow.
And
Congratulations.
thank you. And he is getting established and figuring it out. He actually lives about 12 minutes from us, which is a real blessing. And we don't get to see our grandkids as much as we would like, but we do get to hang out with them fairly regularly. And Jason is in an apartment basically for the first time, holding down a job, a steady job that, you know, is paying the rent and the other bills for the first time. And it's been a journey all the way from, you know, when we sent him to Tuskegee and he ended up dropping out, and he knows that I, you know, share that. And there have been so many moments, so many moments, more than I could ever count, where my wife, in a way that only she can, really, because it's hard feedback, has had to say in a lot of different ways, what Jason needs from you right now is a better sense of how you've struggled. Because Jason sees my credentials, his mom's credentials. She's a CPA. She, you know, has ascended in Ernst & Young as an accountant. Has a family business, funeral home that's very successful in Louisville, Kentucky. And again, I go back to what I talked about, like the performance of parenting, especially from men, is very much so about I'm responsible for the drive. My job,
Yes.
if I think you've taken your foot off the pedal, is to, if I got to go down there and push my hand down on your foot, that's what I'll do.
Right.
Because,
Right.
and it's not even so much about wanting the thing, it's more about the principle of not slacking. And what we often miss in that, I think, is especially for men, is that there's a reason for every struggle. And so the time, and it haven't been a ton of them, but the times that I have spent talking to my 26-year-old son about what it was like to learn that his mom was pregnant and that we needed to figure it out quickly because he was coming, because we neither of us ever had the thought of not allowing him to come into the world. And even talking about what it was like when he called me and told me that he wasn't returning to Tuskegee, when he sent me a picture of the little bitty one with no words, and I guess I was supposed to be like, "Oh, you're having a kid," and that wasn't my reaction. When we've had those conversations, we have moved through years of unspoken confusion, pain, resentment, years, Kelly.
I
And
get it
it's
a
a
hundred
process.
percent.
Neither Jason nor I are people who are just going to sit on a couch and pour it all out, right? But even hearing Jason say to me, after telling him a lot of different vulnerable things, "I love you, Dad." Like that's years. That's years made up. And so I say all that to say that a day in the life for me is just checking in with Jay on the simple stuff, like, "How's work going? Are you ready to surrender that dog yet? Because you can't really take care of a dog and two kids, but okay." You know, like just lowering the temperature on my imagination around what it means to be a dad and what my responsibility is to just drive, 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 push, 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 push. And the vulnerability, and then this is the last thing I'll say on this, is also rooted in the fact that I have leaned on achievement as a kind of, well, I think growing up, I can look back on it and safely call it an idol, because I was the son of an alcoholic mom who was also very, talented and achieved great things. She was a sociology professor, but she was also a functional alcoholic. And so I learned very early on how to manage my environment, how to contingency plan, how to make sure that everybody was good to go before I made sure that I was good to go. And so when things got rough, there was always the next thing I was working on. And I guess in some weird way, I could credit struggle with some of the achievements, right? But I'm also at a time in my life now where there's not much more to do in that space. And so I'm better served to look inside at the disconnections in my own life and try to make repairs and connections there. And that's what I mean when I talk about the importance of embodiment work and trying to become a more connected person. And as you're doing that work, it requires you to go to other people from whom you've been disconnected and try to figure that out. And that's happening with my kids, especially my oldest, in a lot of different ways. I'm hoping that some of that makes sense. I feel like
Oh,
I was
it's
rambling.
so good. It's so good. All of it. I think it's real. Yes, it beyond makes sense because was talking about this somewhere yesterday about the power of being vulnerable. Because when we open up, and what I hear you saying with your son Jason is a few things. One, you listen to him, in a different way versus a judgmental way, and you're open to all of this new life that he's living. You're vulnerable. And you've taken the performance piece out. Like you've relaxed. What did you say? I wrote it down. You've relaxed that performance, lowering the temperature. You've lowered the temperature on what it means to be a parent. I love that. And so, yes, absolutely. And I want to say somebody else just put, there's a reason for every struggle, Dr. Vicky, unspoken confusion, pain, resentment. She says, woof. And then D, yes, you want to comment on that? I love that.
Which part, the unspoken
The Dr.
pain,
Vicky
confused.
piece, yes.
Well, I just think
Unspoken confusion, pain, resentment.
in so many family systems, Black family systems especially, and certainly in fatherhood, you just keep going. That is the model. And not naming, I guess I would say an emotion or reaction, especially in the moment, is often seen as the right thing to do because that may cause things to get worse. And the reality is it never goes away, but it does accumulate. And so the smallest thing can just tip things over the edge because you've not really dealt with all these smaller things. And I think, well, I know marriage has taught me that more than anything else. And I like to, if she were like ready for the call, I'd be like, babe, come jump on real quick so you can talk to folks. But that's not gonna happen. But when I think about something like conflict or disagreement in my marriage, I am more of a confronter. And so in the early years of our marriage, like if something was off, and this is that rigor again in that drive, I'm like, what's going on? What's wrong? We need to talk about this right now. And it was just like the temperature was way, 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 way up there. That is so not who my wife is. And so she's like, when I would say what's wrong and she would say, I don't know, I didn't believe her. I'm like, how can you not know? Of course you know what's wrong. You got on a face, there's emotion, like it's tense. Talk to me. And the agreements that we've struck over the years have been way more about me not doing that and her not letting something go too long because then it becomes something else. And that kind of compromise. And sometimes it worked beautifully, and sometimes like we got to really like take a few tries at it. And some things are very enduring, so you just work on it, like over the years because it's a thing. But the point is that that you draw that kind of stuff from the inside. You don't draw that kind of stuff from your imagination about how you're supposed to show up as of this, as of that. So labels, while useful in some ways, because we got to be able to name things, can really be problematic when you don't have your own understanding of what that label means. What is a husband? What is a man? What is a wife? What is a partner? Who is a leader? What is a leader? And I think those questions are much better answered from experience than, textbooks or other people's imagination of what those things are.
I love that. And I love the fact that you equated this to your own relationship because all of it is interrelated in every relationship. These principles that you're talking about, listening, opening, openness, being willing to see the other person's perspective is true, whether it's with our children or any other loved one or even a friend. So I think that's
That's right.
valuable. There's a note in here as well that says our children are seeing the Cliff's Notes version of our story from the middle to ending chapters and not the beginning because we are no longer, because we no longer live and dwell on adverse experiences doesn't mean they never existed. I agree. Some parts of the struggle can be shared, others not so much. I'd love your comments on that. That's a great comment. That's Dee, who is our executive director. She's at a swim meet. So it's loud in the background. So Dee, I read your note. And thank you for that. I'd love for you to comment on that in terms of sharing, because you talked about how your wife asked you to share with vulnerability with your children, some of your own experiences, not all the degrees and all of the accolades and all that good stuff. Can you share? Can you speak on this comment? Such a good comment.
Yeah, it is. It's a great comment. A lot in there. I guess what comes up for me is that, and I think it's very much so an individual thing. So, I don't know what it looks like for anyone else, but I think there's a line. That's what's coming up in my head. And on one side of the line is vulnerability, and on the other side of the line is, we'll just call it too much. Let's not try to find a technical way to say it. Too much.
Yeah,
You're doing
seeing
too
too
much.
much. Too much. Yep.
And one of the things that's probably both the most painful in looking back at it, but also the thing that requires just constant unpacking, whether that's like, in a counseling session, because I've been with a counselor since my mom died in 2013, is that my mother kind of worked through her childhood pain, trauma, resentments, for her stepmother, et cetera, through conversation with me. And often those conversations were while inebriated. So I
Oh,
grew up as
wow.
a kid that knew way more about my mom's interior thought life than I should have. So I can't help but hold that in my mind and in my heart as I'm also figuring out fatherhood. Because what I don't want to do ever is like, sit down with one of my kids and say, like, let me tell you about this one time that I would, me and your mama was about to split because it was just that, like that, what utility is there in that? But I can and do try to talk to my kids and more so show my kids. It's not so much talking about it, it's what you model. The fact that I'm a person who cares about how conflict gets worked out because it's gonna come, and the way you work it out is going to be situational, but it comes from your own character, from your own wisdom, from your own excuse me, lived experiences, right? So our kids have, for example, heard my wife and I say, like, I don't agree with that, and we both can give our points. We've done that in the presence of our kids because dissent is a skill, actually, as it turns out, right?
Right.
But we're not going to, we know what it feels like when the I don't agree with that is touching something so raw that we actually need to go behind a closed door. I don't ever want my kids to see that, right? And so for,
Right.
that's just me. Like for someone
Right.
else, there may be utility in that, but that's an example of just knowing where that line is and trying to be attentive and thoughtful about it because your experience does touch others, whether you know it or not, right? Like there
Absolutely.
have been a lot of times when my wife will say, like, I didn't say anything. It's like, but you had the face. You had the face. So you actually say
Yeah.
it a lot.
Yep.
And she's like, okay, that's
Exactly.
fine. So and same for
Sometimes
me.
not saying
So
anything is
yeah,
saying a lot.
communication comes in so many forms. Yeah.
Absolutely. I
And
love
knowing where
that.
that line is, I think, that's part of like our ongoing life's work. So this isn't a thing you figure out. It's a thing you just try to refine over time.
I love that. And dissent is a skill. That is brilliant and so true. And how we communicate with one another is with respect, especially with our
Yes.
children,
Yeah.
can be challenging, So I love that you said that. It is it's a skill, and I love that. So thank you for sharing that. And I wanted to double click on something that you talked about with your mom. And how she shared, maybe overshared, I think you said, or talked while inebriated, you said, some things that you didn't think she should have shared. What are some of those things, if it's not too much to ask? What are those, where are those fine lines, if you wouldn't mind sharing, like what would examples of that be that should be, not
Well,
necessarily shared with kids?
yeah, I mean, my mom was married less than, I think they were married five, they were divorced when I was three. So I think the entire marriage was like 5 to 6 years from what I can piece together. But my it was interesting. People sometimes say, like, what is the saying, like a drunk person? You get the truth. The truth actually comes out. So it's
Truth serum, I think.
yeah. So I'm not gonna say that the things she said like weren't true when she was inebriated, but it was certainly a different version than she would have offered up if she were sober. And so some of the things were about just the details of a rocky marriage. I remember her saying one time, your dad hit me so hard, his wedding band bent.
Wow.
So
Some
you can't unhear that. You
exaggerations.
can't unsee that. She would go into deep, deep reflections on what it was like to come home from, I think, college, and find that my grandmother, the only woman I ever knew is my grandmother, who was her stepmother, had given away her childhood dolls. And the thing is, And then it would go up from there in terms of just her own turmoil. Like when I got my PhD, I remember her saying, you know, I didn't get mine so that you could get yours. Well, you didn't get yours actually because of your own challenges. Right. So that's an example of like a res an unspoken resentment that, you know, my mother would never say, like, I resent my kid. But in those moments, those were forms of resentment, right? That she had enough
Absolutely.
intellectual sense to know, like, it's not appropriate for me to say this. But when those inhibitions are down, say whatever comes out, right? And so we got to do something with those moments because they're actually not just moments. They are, they're deep cuts and scars, and they don't only cause us to bleed on the inside, they cause us to bleed out, right? And I remember one of the hardest moments with me and Paula is when I said something. We were having an argument, and I said something, and she was like, "That's Sylvia Jones showing up." And that was an example of over the line for me because, you know, you said something about my mama, right? So she had to, you know, so we worked through that, and she apologized for making that comment and all of that. And so it was fine, but it's an example of like all kinds of stuff can come out, right, when we don't deal with it. And it's not all about our adulthood. It goes all the way back. And one of the reasons I've remained in therapy since going in 2013, which I thought was about dealing with the grief of losing my mom, but so many other things have surfaced, is because if you can get to the point where you recognize help and support as a gift and a resource, it just all goes to the good, right? I am becoming a more connected person. I can go back to other people and try to repair and heal where I know I've done harm, but not wanted to say anything or not wanted to own it. And in the more extreme cases, we can even like agree that there isn't a relationship there anymore, that whatever our connection was for a time was seasonal. And that's not even to say it's a mistake or anything like that. It's just not everything is meant to be everlasting. Unlike, you know, hopefully marriage and parenthood and all that, some relationships, you know, kind of come and go, and there is a seasonal utility for it. I don't think I would be able to do that kind of work if I wasn't working on me weekly.
I
I go
love that.
every Monday from 6:30 to 8:30. I'm in front of a licensed social worker who, you know, I don't need the person to be like uber credentialed, but you know, I talk and I get feedback, and sometimes I share what's in those sessions and sometimes I don't. My kids know that I'm in therapy. My wife and I are very big. My wife is also has her own counselor. We believe in proactive counseling even as a couple, so we always laugh
I
like, why do
love
you
that.
Stop the counseling after the wedding? That's silly. The work
Exactly.
actually starts
That's when it
after the
starts.
ideas in some ways. But we've tried to normalize counseling, and that's very important for my kids because my kids don't have formal diagnoses, although both my kids have been tested for ADHD, for example. And it's still to be determined as to one kid. I'm talking about the younger two, Aaliyah and Caleb. But for the other, there's no formal diagnosis, but it doesn't mean that there aren't challenges there. So as we work through that and decide what that means, whatever might be going on, knowing that she's been raised in a family system that doesn't poo-poo or try to hide help seeking. That's like paramount for both Paul and myself. Like it's just super critical, especially as kids of color, as kids who are not uber rich but also not super poor, as kids who move in and out of all kinds of different spaces in Western Massachusetts, you know, just all these different things. It's important for them to know that their mom and I care about getting counseling support when you need it, and even when you don't think you need it, you know, just knowing that it's there. Yeah.
Well, that part is so critical, especially in our community where there's such a stigma still. And I love that. And I do believe in therapy also. I think I've been going for, I don't know, 40 years or something. It's but also just having someone to talk to that can be an objective advisor is so critical, and I love that you're doing that and modeling that behavior, because you said that earlier. It's not just the words, it's modeling the behavior for your children. I think it's phenomenal. So good. And someone just said, thank you for your vulnerability. Vulnerability heals us all. I completely agree. So I want to make sure we open up the floor to anybody who might want to share something that's on your heart today or ask a question of Dr. Norm. Feel free to come off of mute. You can hit star six if you're on your phone, or if you are more comfortable putting a note in the chat, feel free to do that as well. But we have about 10 minutes or so left. So if anybody has a question or a thought for Dr. Norm, please feel free. Let's see if anybody has posted or if anybody wants to say anything. Don't see anything just yet, so I will keep talking. Happy to do so. What would you say, Dr. Norm, about people who may have young people or adult people who just say, I'm not doing therapy? How can we combat that, or how can we have a healthy conversation? Because I do think there's so much unresolved situations, traumas, pain, situations that somebody outside of us can help us with. How can we talk to our loved ones about that?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is find a squad. I'm thinking about my own daughter who again doesn't have any a formal diagnosis, but sort of struggles sometimes with like organization. And her mother and I have talked with a licensed clinician who has a client base of kids who have similar challenges. And that person has been very generous, thankfully, with all kinds of resources, strategies around everything from, like dealing with her room to how she organizes her thoughts on paper when it comes to homework or a plan she has, or and it's working, right? So even
Great.
though she's not in a formal counseling relationship, and there's no formal diagnosis, we know enough about what we observe to know the kinds of strategies that we may need to use. But we wouldn't know that if we didn't proactively go out and seek it. So I think, and when I say find a squad, I really do mean a squad, meaning you need someone who is expert and expert enough to not do further harm, because miscategorizing, that can be a train wreck. Someone to whom you can just vent. Also paying attention to who kids have on their squad, right? If there tends to be, especially when we're younger, a lot of homogeneity, like, I hang out with people who think like me, kind of look like me, like the same things I like, and that's great for sure. But it may also mean that they're not being challenged when it comes to other opinions or friends who just don't see the gaps, because everyone's kind of looking at the same or a similar thing. So is that coach in their life? Is that teacher in their life? Is that preacher in their life? Is that loved one in their life? We all have that one, right, family member who can say stuff to us that others can't say because there's just something different about it. So I think just intentionally convening a squad when you know there's stuff that needs attention is one kind of practical step you can take, especially in the absence of a clinical relationship.
I love that. And it's true for our kids, our children, but also for ourselves, because we all need a squad. It's like, I have a very good friend, very good girlfriend. I call her Tommy from the show Power. It's like Ghost and then Tommy. It's like that ride or die that's always gonna be there. It's gonna do whatever you need. Sometimes a little, may not be quite right, but it's all good. And we all need a Tommy, and we also need a whole squad around us to help with various things. So I love that
Yeah.
comment and really appreciate it.
And I do see one
So
question that I want to answer, which is, have you
yes,
had
please.
experience with family therapy? And the answer to that is no. And I hope that I have actually had, I don't know, daydreams, I guess they'd be considered, of all of us or some of us sitting in a space just kind of sharing lots of different things, or maybe just a few things. But we've not had that formal opportunity yet, and it's something that I that I hope we do have and praying for.
Yeah, I think it's, I believe in it too. I tried it. We did it when the boys were in their early teen years. It was really helpful, actually. There's another question that says, do you find it difficult for men to speak to the vulnerability of raising their sons to each other, i.e., hashtag barbershop?
Yeah,
A great question.
that's a great, great question. There's a lot in there, as you might know. I think what we do more often than not, our default is to curate what we share. It's not unlike social media, right? And the barbershop is a prime example of that kind of like ethnographic place where it might sound quite unfiltered, especially when it comes to something like sports, politics, or even, you know, who we are as husbands, dads. I wouldn't call it a vulnerable space, though, necessarily. And so what I think happens more often than not is that if a man can find one good bruh, or it's not always a bruh, one good person, two good people, we're not talking about like a lot of people with whom you can truly be real about what's really going on, that is gold and a blessing, and something that I'm guessing most of us either don't have or don't even know to seek out. And I'm blessed to have two best friends that that I don't feel I have to perform with, and it's been my oxygen on many, many, many different occasions. So the barbershop is its own therapy, and it's also a space where we could go so much further. And I'm just using the barbershop as an example because of that safety. But we are hardwired to curate, and I'm not
The
offering that
curate.
up as an excuse. It's just a fact. And so it boils down to an individual's decision to push through that need to curate. And you're not going to do that without the requisite safety that you need, nor should you, by the way.
Right. Say more on that, the nor should you, because sometimes people will say, oh, you're an open book, as if that's a negative. I get that sometimes. Like, oh, you say too much, you talk too much about my personal situation. So can you say more
Yeah.
on that? Because you say nor should you. That sort of
Well,
makes me think that, go ahead.
I don't think enough of us have asked ourselves where the line is. And so there's a way in which we can just put it all out there without thinking through what it means to have put it out there. And then we, and now we are vulnerable to what can happen as a result. And it's not always something as kind of obvious as like people gossiping, right? But it's more about people creating certain prejudgments based on what they now know, or making certain assumptions because of the pieces of information you've given them, but they don't have a full story. And so they start to act upon their limited information. I mean, all sorts of things can recoil in ways that you didn't intend when you're not being thoughtful about what you're putting out there. So there, again, there's a line, right, between curation and oversharing, such that you end up harming yourself, when really what you were trying to do is heal. So, and I think that wisdom comes from the inside. I don't think it can be taught. It's
Absolutely.
I think your heart and your head and the ancestors and all sorts of other forces tell you when something's a little off, or you pause, or have you ever been saying something and you almost say another thing, and then but God gives you that opportunity to kind of like pivot,
Yes,
and
all the time.
whatever comes out, and people don't know, like I was about to go on a whole other road.
But I
So the Holy
pivoted.
Spirit's real. So
Absolutely.
just that kind of discernment, I think, is something that we can miss if we're not just paying attention to what's going on inside of us, you know.
I love that. And so, you mentioned earlier, your two of your kids, I think, being diagnosed with ADHD. I have ADHD as well, and so I'm all over the place all the time. And also very much a creative. What has your, or how has parenting changed you? Just how has it changed you, and how have you dealt with, with that, with people that have ADHD or maybe anxiety or depression or both or all of it?
Yeah, well, we actually don't have those diagnoses, but we know
Oh,
what we're observing. That's one
I
thing I will
see.
say. And then another thing I
Okay.
will say is that in the last couple of years, like maybe a little less, my wife sort of describes herself as someone with undiagnosed ADHD, and it's
Gotcha.
interesting to watch her move in the world because it's almost like something's been lifted, and she can make
Yeah.
sense of a lot of different things in ways that she couldn't when she wasn't necessarily thinking about the reasons why she may have a harder time concentrating on something or want to do multiple things at a time or whatever it might be. So I would say the way it's changed me as a father when it comes to any number of these challenges, whether it's ADHD or anxiety or depression, is it sounds simple, but I think the bottom line is it's okay. It's okay
Absolutely.
is what's coming up for me. I think about the basement of our house was filled with all sorts of tapes and CDs and books and magazines about anxiety. And I just remember thinking to myself as a kid and adolescent and teenager and young adult, like, if this is this much of a problem with my mom, I'm not sure that like all of this reading and listening is going to really do anything if you're not actually talking to someone. But that was how she managed, right? She was going to take this kind of professorial approach. But she would tell stories about, like, seeing my grandfather when he was dealing with a thing, and she said his belly would he looked like he was 8 months pregnant. And so I know that in my family, anxiety shows up in the body in very particular ways, right? And so in my own life, I can recognize when anxiety has me so gripped that it's gonna negatively impact or influence the way I'm showing up as a parent. And so it kind of goes back to pausing for me, and or sometimes sharing, like if Aaliyah comes in or Caleb comes in and says, "How was your day?" It's like, it was a good day. I felt kind of anxious for a lot of it for some reason, but it was a good day overall. Like that's not going over the line, but that's exposing and naming something that's very real. So I think the more we can do it as a community, the more we can just tell ourselves like it's okay, because it may not go away, but it also can be managed. It's not going to shut you
Absolutely.
down. It's a thing with which you have to contend and manage. In some cases, overcome, work with, and in some cases, use it to your advantage. And when I say that, I just mean that, if you need some extra time on a test, I'm not mad at you. Like,
That's right.
take
That's
your
right.
extra time. Others don't have that.
That's
So just
right.
kind of talking about it more and more, I think has been the biggest gift for me as a dad, whether that's
Love that.
depression or anxiety, yeah,
Right, or any of the other things, and knowing that
or
it's
any of the
all
other things.
okay. There's
It's all
nothing
okay.
wrong.
It really is.
Absolutely. I love that. I really want to say thank you so much, Dr. Norm, for being here this morning with us. You've shared so many incredible nuggets of wisdom about fatherhood, about listening, about vulnerability. I think that's a big takeaway, being vulnerable and sharing, and then as a parent, being willing to pause and listen in a different way and respond in a different way. So, as we wrap
Absolutely.
up this morning, is there any major takeaway that you'd like us to take with us as we head into the week?
Rest, because it's not just good for the body, mind, and soul, but it's where answers come. So take the time to rest, because if that is an investment that can't be replaced or swapped out for anything else, it's the reservoir. So rest.
Just say that again and again and again. So that is critically important and something that a lot of us don't do regularly. So thank you for closing with that. Appreciate you being here so much. Again, thank you for getting up early and sharing such wisdom. And we'll turn it over to now to Dr. Vicki Johnson, who'll close us out with a prayer this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Hey, Norm.
Hey, sis.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you so much for the pour today, the POUR, the pour into our pictures. God, we thank you for this is the day that you have made. And we choose to rejoice and give your name glory. Thank you for this moment in time. As always, we're grateful for the wisdom that you've deposited into our lives today. We pray now a special blessing of restoration and anointing on Dr. Norm Jones and the work that he is doing in the world, the man, the father, the husband, the son that he is modeling for so many. Thank you for his wisdom, and thank you for blessing the work of his hands. Thank you for blessing the work of the Sunrise Project through Kelly and Dee. Thank you for this support community that we have been given grace to partake in. Now, as we go further into this day, we also thank you for the reservoir of rest, where many would strive to do more. Thank you for the call to be still and listen and wait and pause and be refreshed. Bless every household represented on this call, every mom, every dad, every parent, every caregiver. We don't take for granted the opportunity that you give to us each and every week. And we thank you that at this time next week, we will gather again together to celebrate 5 years, the number of grace of this special community that you have given to us as parents. Continue to give us wisdom, help us to raise our children so that they can stand on our shoulders, take our lessons, take our successes, and be better people in the world, better parents to their children. We thank you for all of these things, spoken and unspoken. And I especially want to pray a prayer of release and relief today from unspoken confusion, unspoken chaos, unspoken anger, unspoken tension. God, give us grace to ask for the help that we need so that we can move forward into the world as healed individuals. And we will give you glory, honor, and praise for the same. In your name we do pray. Amen.
Amen.
Have a powerful day. Love you, Dr. Norm. Thank you again for saying yes. Love you, Kelly.
Love you too, big sis. Thank you, Dr. Norm. Thank you, Dr. Vicky. Really appreciate both of you always. And have an incredible week, everyone. And yes, as Dr. Vicky said, next Sunday we'll be celebrating 5 years of the Sunrise Project. I cannot believe we've been doing this every Sunday for 5 years. Time has flown by, and it's been such a blessing for me personally. And I'm grateful for all of you for showing up. So thank you. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Thank you again.